Hey everyone, welcome back to Son of a Binge. Today we have a great guest from Lucius Malfoy to Cary Grant. Jason Isaacs is one of the most talented actors and a true chameleon in the best way ever. Jason, welcome.
Thanks very much. That's what a horrendous pressure from that opening. I should just
I
leave
know.
now.
I know. A lot of people wouldn't think chameleon is a compliment, but I'm going to explain to you why I'm saying that later.
No, I'd like that. You're joking. That one of the great things about the part that we're going to discuss today is that male actors just don't get to do disguise much. I never get
No,
to.
no.
You're mostly cast to look like this and be something like someone who looks like this would behave. And every now and again, rarely, unlike women who get to do full disguise all the time, you get to do something like what I got to do in Archie, which is, excuse me, not look like me or walk like me or talk like me. And that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, let me tell you, you're playing Cary Grant in a limited series called Archie on BritBox, and it's fantastic. I just want everyone to know I binged it in half a day,
Did you watch it
and
all
I
in one go?
canceled.
Good for you.
Yeah, I just wanted one go, and I was like, and then I was spending hours after just Googling Cary Grant and everything about his life. So I always ask my guests to do this: describe Archie in 30 seconds or less, almost as if you're convincing someone, like a
Well,
trailer,
first of
to
all, I'm
watch
English,
it.
so I find it nauseating the idea that I should ever persuade anyone else to watch something that I'm in. It goes against the grain completely. I'd much rather you did that.
Okay.
But it is a four-part series that tells you about the life of Archie Leach, who was a terrible a man with a catastrophic childhood and a desperate need to be loved that could never be sated, who created a character called Cary Grant to try and save himself and found that it failed and really only found himself and saved himself when he walked away.
Ah, that was perfect.
It
You did
wasn't
that
that
really
good. I could
fast.
do it again if I take two, but it doesn't matter. Moving on.
No, let's do take one. Okay, this is my version of it. A
Go on.
boy named Archie becomes one of the most famous actors in history, has a terrible father who fakes his mother's death, a not-dead
Spoiler,
mother, a
I'm
lot
going
of
to stop you right
wives.
there. Total spoiler, but carry on.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, guys. Okay, I'll edit it out. Don't worry.
No, that's
Wait,
fine.
a lot of wives, a daughter, a bit of LSD, and possibly a case of OCD, maybe?
Oh my God, all of the acronyms. He had OCD, ADHD, mostly it was PTSD.
Most of
And it
them.
wasn't a bit of LSD either. He took LSD hundreds of times with a doctor to try and rid himself of the nightmares for these, from these scars, these childhood wounds that were not only open, but the more famous he got, the more beloved he became, the wider those wounds opened, because the dissonance between the creature, the character he created on screen that the world fell in love with, and who he really was on the inside, and who he was when he shut the front door, was so great. The greater it got, the greater the chasm, the more pain he felt.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. We're going to get more
I feel
into
like we're writing
LSD
an
later.
essay on him now.
Yeah, I love it. I'm going to be ready after this. Okay, so tell me what drew you to this project. Did it come to you? Did you seek it out?
God, no. Who would be moronic enough to seek out a poison chalice like this? No, I heard. It always starts with the agent. The agent goes, "They're doing a Cary Grant project," and I go, "What do you mean?" And they go, "Well, someone to play Cary Grant." I went, "Go fuck yourself. I'm not. Who would be just suicidally enough to walk into those shoes?" And he said, "Well, it's called Archie, and Jeff Pope's written it. Let me send the scripts." And I went, "Jeff Pope, he's a really good writer. He's written some great stuff. Why would he be, idiotic enough, masochistic enough to create a part that where an actor had to fail playing Cary Grant?" And then I read it, and I realized Cary Grant wasn't a person. Archie Leach was a person, and he devised, invented, curated, and shaped a character on screen, unconsciously, I think, that could be and would be loved. In fact, he'd done it throughout his life. He'd been whoever people needed him to be. And he did it so successfully that most of the world fell in love with him. And behind closed doors, he was just a man still dealing with the aftermath of being abandoned and neglected and abused and starved. Not starved of love, and also really physically hungry for a lot of his life. So, for instance, he always ate not only what was on his plate, but on everyone else's plate around him. And if there's any other food left, he bundled it up, even when he had parties, and saved it, made sandwiches for weeks. He was, the scars of childhood didn't leave him for a very, very long time. And he kept on trying to make other people love him in the way that he thought he deserved or needed to be loved, and drove them all away from him. I mean, he broke every relationship he was in. And only really when he had a kid, as in my estimation, when he had a child and he could give that child uncomplicated love and he didn't expect anything back, did he begin to heal and realize that what he'd been seeking all his life and the limelight and this adoration and validation from other people was making him less and less healthy. And he got healthier when he started to direct his love outwards.
I feel like you could be a therapist. Like, the way you just, like, distilled that, it's perfect.
Well, I mean, I spent a long time trying to understand him because he behaved so abominably to Diane. You know, Diane Cannon, his fourth wife, wrote a book that is one of the inspirations for this series. And she was an invaluable source for me and for the brilliant Laura who plays Diane on screen. And she has such a... at a distance, because she waited such a long time before she wrote a book about this time, and then it's been 10 years since then, them working on the script together. She has such generosity when she looks back at a time of her life when she was just suffocated and driven in the end to a mental hospital by his behaviour. Yeah. She can see the fault lines going back to this abused child. She, at the time, she couldn't. She was a young girl, and she married someone older than her dad, and he was Cary Grant when she married him, and then once he shut the front door, he became Archie Leach, who was a whole different kettle of fish. But at the time, she thought she was doing something wrong. If only she could do something different. And the more she talked to me about it, the more I kept on wanting to reach back through time and rescue her as a dad myself. And go, get out. It's not your fault. There's nothing you can do. But now, when she looks back, she's unfailingly generous about how he couldn't help it and how out of control he was.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you, like, what kind of research you did and what did you learn from Diane and Jennifer, who also is a producer, executive producer on this? What did you learn from them about him that you never knew before?
Well, so before I spoke to them, I read, each of them wrote a book about him, autobiography, covering their relationship with him. Jennifer's is a really lovely memoir of a young girl whose dad is not an actor and is just delightful to her. So it's fabulous that that was her experience, but that's not who he was when he wasn't with her. It wasn't who he was leading up to her birth, and it certainly wasn't who he was with Diane when they were married and afterwards. So Diane's book was more useful to me, and Diane's insights more useful to me, because Jennifer still loves her dad and worships him. And it's extraordinarily brave of her to make herself vulnerable and to be part of this project where he is laid bare, his warts and all, and some really despicable behaviour, although you see the full humanity of it. You see where it came from and that it was not something he was really able to change. He tried to change, but only much later in life did he begin to find any kind of, balance in his life, serenity in his life. I spoke to them, but I also read... Yeah. Every biography, and I read every other biography, autobiography that overlapped where they had any encounters with him. And I read an unpublished PDF that someone sent to me privately about a relationship they had with him. I read the minutes of the business meetings from MGM and Fabergé. I read blogs where people had encountered him. But the one thing that eluded me the whole time was having any idea what he sounded like, because he didn't sound like he did in the films. You know, I knew he couldn't sound like it in the films because I analysed them and watched them, and he said every single line with almost exactly the same intonation pattern in a way that no one does in life. And I knew that couldn't be what he sounded like when he was screaming at Jennifer or waking up crying from his nightmares or taking acid or, not Jennifer, sorry, screaming at Diane or any of the other things. And I also had heard from all the accounts how carefully he rehearsed all his lines, and I could hear that in his delivery. So I searched and searched. I asked everybody at ITV and BBC and all these other TV networks, could you dig up an old interview for me? He didn't give them. Didn't do interviews. Didn't want the mask to drop. Never wanted the public to know just who he was. Wasn't that the voice wasn't the same accent. Just he just was, I don't know, he lived in fear, but he controlled his image so carefully.
Did Diane or Jennifer have any home movies of him where he talked?
Jennifer did have a bunch of home movies that he had made of her. So just occasionally, because he was trying to secretly film her and she was sick of it and tried to get away from it. She was a kid. Like me, I shot my kid when they came along. I've got boxes and boxes of mini DV tapes that no one's ever going to watch. Like every second of their life. He was very similar. Because he devoted all the energy he had given to being an international film star to being a dad, which was a lot. Yeah. It was quite overwhelming for Jennifer a lot. But that was just him occasionally whispering into the microphone. And then I came across this interview where he had... in the last year of his life, some student had written to him saying, written to his representation, he had a lawyer at that point, going, can I send some questions for Mr. Grant? We're showing a film festival of his films. And he got a note back saying, call this number on Saturday morning. So he called on Saturday morning, went to the university radio department, and Barbara Grant answered, Carrie's fifth wife, and she said, hold on, just get Carrie. He went, oh my God. And Cary Grant came on the phone. And the first thing he said is, you're not recording this, are you? And he goes, well, I was going to. I'm at the university. No, don't. I don't want you to. Very firmly. So he gestured to his friend to not record it, and his friends are fine. And they had this long, rambling conversation for an hour And then when it was over, his friend went, I mean, I did record it. I'm not an idiot. And so I read this interview that I thought was a transcript. I found him. I tracked him down with a bit of online detective work. And I said, I think you recorded an interview with Cary Grant in 1986. And he got extremely upset or paranoid or whatever it was and said, who are you? Why are you asking? Why would you want to know? I said, no, I'm an actor. I'm playing him. I'm desperate to hear what he sounded like. And after we chatted a bit and got to know him a bit, he very kindly, because out of respect, he'd never played it to anyone. He played it to me. And he gave me a copy of it. And in that, that was the final piece of research that made me feel, okay, now I've spoken to him. I've heard him. I can hear whole different speech patterns than he ever did in the movies. I can hear, even at 82, a little bit of frustration at being misunderstood and self-deprecation about how silly and pointless the films were, and some belligerence when he got annoyed about things where he didn't think people, just I heard a whole bunch of other things. And that was the final piece of me that made me think, all right, I can have a crack at this.
Oh, that's great. Because I did read that you said when you first got it, you were like, this is such a bad idea to play him.
To play Cary Grant is a bad idea. To play Archie Leach, nobody knows who he is. This is the whole point of the series. Sometimes I've done an interview, and at the end of 5 or 10 minutes, they go, was there anything you found that was surprising? I'm like, have you been listening? Everything was surprising about
it. You're like, every single part. So I do have a question. If you weren't playing Archie Leach, and it was just as a producer, who would you have cast as Cary Grant? If not you.
Oh, my God, not me. Let's take you. I have no idea. Well, it doesn't matter, because in a year or two's time, AI will be doing it, and we'll be watching Cary Grant on screen again.
That's true. It's going to be so nice. Like, you're one of the final humans I'll interview.
Yeah, probably all the actors who turned it down before me, they were too smart or too expensive. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. You're like, I'm not even answering that. So, all right, let's talk about his dad was the worst. There's nuance.
Yeah, that's true. But you can trace the chains back. His dad was violently alcoholic and abusive. Maybe, who knows if he was sexually abusive, but certainly he was violent. With his mother. got her locked up in an asylum. But, his dad's mother, Archie's grandma, was even worse. So who knows why his dad was like that? If that was his mother, the mother was just a witch and completely neglected him, didn't feed him, beat him, was alcoholic herself. He was out looking for food. He was looking for scraps. He was looking for anything. No wonder he got expelled from schools. No wonder he spent his life trying to make someone feel like he might be lovable. Because this is the Jesuits say, give me the child before they're seven, I'll show you the man. He was badly damaged and just thrown on the scrap heap of life. So early on that my dad's 91. He still has nightmares about the bailiffs. The bailiffs used to come to his house when he was like a first grader, because his dad was a bit of a ne'er-do-well and they had to move all the time because they couldn't pay rent. And my dad's incredibly respectful, always been incredibly honorable, important to him to be honorable because his father was the opposite. But he still has nightmares. He went to school age 5, first day of school, halfway through, they came and they said, Isaacs, come here. You don't live in the neighborhood anymore. And the family had been kicked out of the house because he hadn't paid rent. But at 91 that he still has those nightmares. That hasn't been his reality for 86 years.
So Cary Grant was just haunted. I have to say, his relationship with his mother is fascinating. And you and Harriet had such great mother-son chemistry. Do you think she was was she jealous of all the women in his life since they were robbed of that relationship?
She was numbers of things. First of all, she was institutionalized. So she'd been in an institution for a long time. That will make sane people start staring mad anyway by itself. And certainly in those days.
And for 20 years, right? How long was she?
Yes, 20 years. Slightly longer than 20 years. But not only that, she was both jealous of him and hateful to him. She was always angry. She was angry because she partly blamed him too, even though it clearly been nothing to do with him. And she was incredibly rude. She was unguarded, unboundaried, whatever, she was incredibly difficult. He was always very upset. First time he saw her, he went and disappeared for 3 weeks. They couldn't find him, the biggest star in the world. And he was in a hospital with his liver exploding from alcohol. But every time he went to see her, it knocked him off kilter, and he was a very he was fragile emotionally. If he was unflappable on screen, he was very flappable off screen. And every time he took someone to see his mother, it was a nightmare encounter. And she wanted to move to California and be near him. And he created this edifice, this life that looked from the outside like it was marvelous, although behind closed doors in his house, it was still carnage. But if she'd come into it, it was unthinkable introducing her to these worlds where he was playing the part of and sometimes feeling like he was charming and he was, you know, at ease socially with Howard Hughes, with billionaires and with presidents and stuff. And he was at ease with all those people as well as this other thing at home. And if his mother had come into it, God knows what kind of grenade that would have been to his life. So he banned her from coming to America. And albeit that he was lovely to her, he gave her money, and she was loving, slightly weirdly incestuous towards him, she also hated him for that. So it was a complicated relationship.
Yeah. So when you were talking to Diane, because how old is Diana now? She's 89?
Sharp as a pin.
Like, yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Like, does she remember this, like, yesterday?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Like, how would she describe their relationship? Well, what do you think she would say the best part of it was and the most challenging part of it?
Well, that's too much of a summary, even though this is a short interview.
Yeah.
She spoke at great length to me. She wrote the book, but also I'd asked very specific questions. What did he say when this happens? What did he feel? I asked about their very intimate life, which she was completely, unrestricted. I could ask anything, and she told me everything. She's generous now, because what happens is, she's healed, in her words, spent a long time healing. But watching this has been very disturbing for her, because it's one thing writing about stuff and talking about stuff. But when she watched Laura be her and go through the things that I was putting her through, it brought a lot of it back for her. Very difficult for her. So on the one hand, because I've shared some publicity duties with her and spoken to her a fair bit. And on the one hand, she can feel the old rage or the frustration or the fury that she was put through that.
Yeah.
That she can feel the flames, but she's learned not to let herself be consumed by it. So she continues to counter it with something about how sweet he was and how much she was in love and how much he couldn't help it and how much, let's go back to the early days when he wooed me, when he did this romantic thing. But that's because to go elsewhere is to realize what an appalling, desperate time it was for her and how little help there was. You know, her own dad, who was younger than Carrie, couldn't help. Carrie said to her, she's in my domain now. Said to her agent, she's not leaving this house till she's broken like a pony. You know, and so she's remarkable in that she can talk about it with generosity. I, on her behalf, I'm furious with who he was. But then I think he couldn't help it. It's an explanation. It's not an excuse, but it's an explanation.
Yeah. I feel that same rage towards his father, but you're right. It's so cyclical, like of how his father was probably abused by the mother. And
sure. Carrie tried at least. He knew he had these tremendous problems because his relationships were breaking down everywhere. And with Betsy Drake, his third wife, he explored an awful lot of therapeutic avenues, including LSD, which is why when he was trying to get Diane to take LSD, because he took it hundreds of times with the doctor, she refused and liked drugs. And he said, look, I did it with Betsy. And she went, look what happened there. You got divorced. So it's not a great argument for taking it.
So when did he start taking LSD? Do you remember around what age?
With Betsy. So with his third wife and seeking Eastern philosophy answers. And there were many things he sought. He knew how badly he was scarred on the inside. He knew how troubled he was. He knew how heartbroken he was when relationships broke down. He knew how extreme his behavior was in every area. He was, excuse me. He had all those things that today we have labels for and pills for, all of them.
Yeah. Do you think he was mad at his mother for dying before he knew?
Yeah, my God. He felt abandoned by her. He was a kid and he came home one day and was told she's gone to the seaside to get well. And soon afterwards, he was told she's actually dead. So, yeah, I know that he spent decades feeling completely abandoned by his mother and father, but he wasn't feeling that. He was. He's feeling unwanted. He was unwanted. He's feeling unloved because no one loved him. And I don't know that she did love him. She was capable of love before she went in or when she came out because his older brother had died and something had really snapped in her. And she had such massive postpartum depression. Not postpartum depression, sorry. The bereavement scarred and damaged her so badly.
Yeah, exactly.
But she was a hard, Diane's man. She was a hard woman. As well as talking about this character that he created that people loved and worshipped and lusted after, that's why he was funny. So many comedians have such dark center and origins for the reason they want to make people laugh.
Well, so I know there were a lot of rumors that he might be bi or gay. And in fact, I know I love how you guys address it in the limited series, like
It was a source of a lot of discussion, as you can imagine.
It was beautifully executed. And I read what Jennifer said in her interviews. So did you and Diane and Jennifer talk about that? Or did you and Diane in particular? What did they have to say?
Well, when I was first offered it, there was no reference in there. And I said to Jeff Pope, the writer, who is such a lovely collaborative man, I couldn't possibly do this unless we acknowledge that he was with men for a big part of his life. He said, well, we only concentrate on Diane. That's the only relationship we show. And also, I don't know that he was. And I went, oh, Jeff, come on. Read all the biographies. He said, of course I've read all the biographies. But there's no proof that he was. Yeah. And he didn't say that he was, most importantly. And he never said it to Diane or Jennifer. So putting it in is just, everything else we've got on screen are things that we know happened from people who were there. Or else he acknowledged. And I said, well, I've got too many gay friends. And I just come from the funeral of a friend of mine who was a gay costume designer in New York, who was thrilled that I'd been offered to play Cary Grant and had Cary Grant stamps and pictures and original things in his apartment. And I went, I can't. And Jeff said, okay, well, look, that was when Jeff invited me to be an executive producer. He said, look, you have these strong feelings. We have to balance everyone. We have to do what we know to be true. But come in the tent, argue your case and make contributions. So that scene that you're talking about, I wrote those lines where we deal with his sexuality. And I think it deals with it elegantly because to anybody who knows, it's clear that he's saying, yes, I've been with many men, I've been with many women. But right now, I want to be with you. He never said to Diane that he'd been with men. So there are accounts of him much later on saying to a house guest, I was gay when I was young, then I was bi, then I was straight. But there's also the fact that both Diane and Betsy said he wasn't gay when he was fucking me. I can promise you that. So, he sued Chevy Chase for saying that he was gay. But then I think that one of the most important things to him in life beyond his daughter was to keep the Cary Grant brand pure. It was something that Jeff and I enjoyably disagreed about. When he started writing this, it was the catalyst originally was Jennifer's book. And he read it at an airport and he went, oh, God, how lovely. The biggest star in the world gave up acting when he got a daughter to be a full-time father. And when I came on board, I went, no, he didn't. He didn't at all. He stopped acting because he was getting too old to play opposite gorgeous young women. And it was embarrassing. Yeah. And he didn't want to take character parts. He'd been number one in the world. He didn't want to be number three in the world and then number 10 in the world. And it was time for him to step off the carousel. And it was the perfect opportunity to leave his brand perfect and, as it still is today, admired and adored. And so it's something we make fun of each other about, and we'll never know exactly what it was. And no one does anything in life through one simple motivation anyway, but they both coincide.
Yeah, I have to say, once again, that was a brilliant line. I loved how you summed it up, because no one can tell unless he was here. And even that, I don't think he'd ever say. So Jason, this is Son of a Binge, so I have to ask, what show or movie have you binged yourself recently?
Recently?
Or in the last few years, something that really stood out to you?
Oh my God, I binge everything. So I sit up all night, and when I watch things, I watch them all the way through, beginning to end. I'm trying to remember. I just binged Murder at the End of the World because it's made by Zell and
I just
Brett,
started that.
Who are my friends terrific. And I think remarkable people, creative forces in life. Before I binged Better Things because I think it's one of the best shows ever made. I think Pamela Adlon's a genius, and I really admire the man who runs FX, John Landgraf, who gave her license to tell a story just about being a mum. There's no aliens and bags of mafia money or any of the rest of it. I binged the OA, in fact, when I was sent the press link before the press night. And I was going to watch 5 minutes of it or just to see what the tone was. I watched all 8 hours and went straight from there to the press junket.
You're a real binger.
I binged all 7 seasons of Breaking Bad in a hotel room while I was shooting Fury. I mean, I binged everything. I binged Beef.
Beef was so good. Okay. You were Peter the Great on The Great, which is one of my favorite shows. I love that show. What was it like working with Elle and Nicholas? And it is a travesty that that was canceled. I feel riot.
They did four great... Is it four or three?
Three or four.
The stuff they did is magnificent and untouchable and so incredibly witty. Tony is the Oscar Wilde of the modern television landscape. It's extraordinary what he did. And in fact, he tempted me out of lockdown because I was My dad and two of my three brothers were in hospital dying with COVID in March 2020.
Oh,
and they
gosh.
Were really
I'm so sorry.
Incredibly... No, they didn't die. They lived, thank God. But
okay.
But there was a moment I thought, I'm going to be left with just one brother from having a dad and three brothers. And so I was inside the house extremely cautious about anything, going anywhere and wiping down all the shopping with,
everything, the groceries. And...
and then they said, come and do a day on the grate. And I'm not going to go to work. I'm sorry. I just can't. I don't want to be in that environment. It's too dangerous. And he said, it's outdoors in a forest. You're in a grave. You can drive yourself to work, put your own makeup on. You don't need to be near anybody else. No, makeup will be in a full headset. And so I went to do one night's work on the grate in the grave. And I realized it was safer than my house because I had teenage girls who were, I'm pretty sure, seeing their friends. And so and then I did a couple of days on sex education where they guaranteed me the same thing, N95 masks, was shooting in the house with all the windows open. And that's what tempted me back into the workplace. And then I worked nonstop through COVID.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Yeah. Did you watch the end of
the so grate? It's so funny. I think the grate is staggeringly funny and brilliantly acted.
It's like the best dark comedy ever. Did you watch like what happened in the final season? Did you?
Of course. Yeah, no, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know about the horse.
Yeah.
Spoiler
no,
alert,
I
everyone.
Think it's incredible. Yeah. I think it's an incredible show.
I
binged so many more things. I can't remember what I binged. I just was binging something the last few nights. What the hell am I watching at the moment? I downloaded everything to watch it here on the plane.
Is it Netflix? Showtime?
The fuck did I just watch on the plane? I can't believe
Brit
it.
BritBox?
I don't have BritBox yet. I'm planning on getting it. Actually, when I get on the plane to go home, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, God, it's going to annoy me so much when this is over. But anyway,
I know. We'll think of it soon. But remember I said you were a chameleon, like, in the best way?
I don't know what a bad way is. I don't take that. I take that as a compliment.
Okay.
My job is to
try and I don't know if someone would take that a bad way, but I was, like, doing my research, obviously, about you. And when I typed your name in, you know, a picture of you and Tom Felton came up. And, of course, I know you're from Harry Potter. And I was like, oh, he's the almost Dark Lord. That's what I call him.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I saw it and it clicked, I'd forgotten that you were Lucius. And so I like got a shudder down my spine when I realized I'm talking to Lucius Malfoy here.
I hadn't forgotten.
I know.
I knew.
You're just like. Yeah, like to go from Cary Grant, from Lucius Malfoy to Cary Grant.
Well, I
like,
didn't.
Who would
Because I finished Lucius Malfoy in 2008 or 2009. I've played about 100 parts since then. So in your head, to go from one to the other,
in
well,
my
I've played
head.
Many, many other parts since then.
No, I know you did that, but it's just like to be able to do both of those so brilliantly, who would have thought?
I'm an actor. I'm a bottomless pit of need for flattery. I'll take it wherever I can get it. But the fact is, all actors do that. All actors go from playing a pope to playing a drug dealer to playing a, you know.
Sort of. But
all,
not
that's
everyone
what we do.
Does
we
it
pretend
well.
To be other people. Well,
yeah,
that's true.
Not everyone does it well.
That's, not
so
everyone
that's
gets
why
the help.
So,
I mean, if you look at the makeup and hair and special effects department in Harry Potter and the people who do Cary Grant, they're doing a lot of the heavy lifting for me.
I really liked your Cary Grant chin. I was very drawn to that.
I mean, it's weird. If anybody watching this wants to go back and look at Cary Grant's actual dimple, it's bizarre. When you look at it, you go,
it
well,
is.
That wasn't real. He must have cut the butt off some Barbie doll and stuck it on. It's so pronounced and huge. You could hide coins in there. It's just extraordinary. So we went much smaller
that's
from
the,
that.
That's the Barbie, Cary Grant crossover we need. The butt of Barbie. Wait, so I do have a question. Would you ever, you know, with all these limited series taking off, would you ever be open to revisiting like a Harry Potter, like Malfoy backstory as a limited series? I'm only saying this because I talked to my friend and who loved you in the series, and I was telling her about Cary Grant, and she said it should be a series called "I Love Lucius." And I was like,
"I'm
brilliant.
More likely to revisit Star Trek." In the relaunch of Star Trek and Star Trek Discovery, that character disappeared, but he has a parallel in another universe, and I could see them coming up with a good storyline. I don't think Joe, who is about to launch into making the television series reboot the entire thing, is also going to create a spin-off series about Lucius. And if it wasn't her involved in the genesis of it, I can't imagine it being as good. I'd rather leave it that it was reasonably well done and not sully it with some horrible Godfather 3 version of it.
Okay. Oh, that great note there. All right, guys. Jason, thank you so much. This was so much fun. And everyone... You have to check out Jason as Cary Grant on BritBox. And, of course, look out for I Love Lucius.
But it's called Archie.
Turned it down.
But it's called Archie, not Cary Grant.
Yeah. Well, no. I know. I just want them to know you're playing Cary Grant, whoever everyone thought was Cary Grant. But you will learn so much, and it is so fascinating.
Thank you, Jason.
You're brilliant at this. So thank you so much for taking the time.
I'll take it for now. Thank you so much. Bye.
All right. Bye, guys. Thank you.